This is Jim Miller, and Origins is back. Recently, I gave you a behind-the-curtain look into the groundbreaking comedy Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, it's time to take you on another ride, one that's nearly 40 years in the making. Available now, the podcast series Origins with James Andrew Miller, Chapter 2, a deep exploration into the world of ESPN. In 5 different episodes, we will reveal previously unheard and unpredictable moments that turned ESPN from a ramshackle couple buildings into one of the greatest media success stories of all time. Spanning its early beginnings, its meteoric rise, to its current challenge state, you'll hear from all the key players, in front of the camera and behind. Look for Origins with James Andrew Miller on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you download your programs.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Christine Brennan of USA Today.
And I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com. Welcome to an extremely busy Monday Sports Reporters podcast. We start right off with what we knew was going to be the game of the year in the AFC and turned out to be the game of the year. Tom Brady took the Patriots down the field and got a 2-point conversion. Stop me if you've heard that one before. And then on the play that may decide who goes to the Super Bowl from the AFC, guys, Ben Roethlisberger decided from close to the goal line to throw a pass into the teeth of the Patriots defense in the middle of the field. Mitch and Chris, what could possibly ever go wrong with a decision like that against the Patriots?
It's the Super Bowl all over again. When I watched that, I said, this is the Seattle Super Bowl all over again. New England wins on an interception in the end zone on a pass that never should have been thrown. And, you know, the Pittsburgh was reeling from that decision where they thought they had it won. And we all know sports well enough to know when you think you've won it and then 3 minutes go by and they say to you, sorry, you have to do it all over again. Your thinking is not the same as it was on the drive going in. But those were two bad decisions by Ben Roethlisberger after a great pass that should have won the game. And those bad decisions were to throw over the middle of the field and not into the end zone. So now you have to rush up to the line and then not to throw a fade. All he needs is a field goal to go to overtime. You're at home. Why don't you want to go to overtime at home? Instead of throwing a fade, he throws in the middle of the field. It's intercepted. There goes Brady jumping all, you know, the victory from the mouth of defeat. And I felt like I was watching that Super Bowl a few years ago.
Well, exactly. It was interesting after the fact. Roethlisberger was saying that in his headset, they're telling him clock it, as in spike it,
right,
and then go to fourth down. And so you can understand there's a lot of confusion at that moment. But you would expect Roethlisberger to be able to overcome that, to be above that and say, all right, I'm getting yelled at by the coaches. They want me to clock and spike it. And of course, if they spike it, then you just bring, as you said, bring the field goal unit on and you tie the game, chip shot, no problem. You go into overtime, you take your chances. And even then, even with this confusion that's obviously going on inside the headset of Ben Roethlisberger, you expect Roethlisberger to be able to have the presence of mind to overcome that.
And here's the thing, and Mitch just referenced it. Okay, Jesse James's non-catch. People in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, can call their congressman or congresswoman, okay? It, by definition, it was not a catch. I'm just going to read you what the rule says. A player must maintain control of the ball until after his initial contact with the ground, whether in the field of play or in the end zone. If he loses control of the ball and the ball touches the ground before he regains control, the pass is incomplete. By definition, and even though it looked like a touchdown when James came down, that was not a catch. And I know it goes back to Dez Bryant. I know it goes back to Calvin Johnson. They keep trying to tweak this rule. Maybe it's not right yet, but that was not a touchdown catch.
It wasn't a touchdown catch by the rules as they stand now, but that's a bullshit rule. I'm sorry. And they need to change this thing. Lou and I were talking about it before the show. The old days where all you had to do was cross the plane of the goal is so much easier to enforce and so less arguable than this thing. This thing on slow motion replay, when someone comes down with a ball that wiggles ever so slightly when you hit the ground, is always, I don't care, Mike, how many times you tweak it, it is always going to be a difficult thing to interpret. And you're going to say, well, if you speed up the film a little bit, it sure doesn't look like he was bobbling. But if you slow it down to one frame a second, you can see tiny little movement. I don't know why they ever went away from the break the plane and the goal line. It's the simplest thing to determine. With today's technology, you would never get that wrong. This they get wrong, or at least anger half the fan base all the time.
Well, exactly, Mitch. And of course, it doesn't help. Most people are watching it on TV. And of course, you're hearing the announcer say, oh, done, no problem. So of course, that will gin everybody up after the fact, for sure. I agree. You break the plane, it's a touchdown. End of conversation. It's the simple visual of that. Frankly, I remember the days I was covering the NFL when Don Shula, among others, was fighting for replay, saying, if we know less about a game than the people at home, we've got to do something about it. And that was his idea, and that was the concept that led to the NFL going deep into instant replay, heavy with it right off the bat, way ahead of baseball, for example. And that's a great idea, to know more about it on the field than you do than people at home.
You know.
But in this case, you've now screwed it up. You've gone way too far, and it's ruined the game, and obviously
Michael
gives us a lot to
agree.
Talk about.
I don't think
it's ruined the game. Listen, I've never thought that. I've always thought the idea that the ground can't cause a fumble is stupid. Okay, I think it's silly that if you're in midair and you can just break the glass, you know, the football equivalent of the glass ceiling, then it's a touchdown. But all I'm saying is we can litigate this rule all over again. It was not a touchdown. It was never going to be a touchdown. And the Steelers shouldn't have gotten a touchdown on that play. And what makes me kind of sad about this game, not because we have so much to talk about today. Once again, it's kind of obscured the fact that when Tom Brady, the greatest player of all time, had to take his team down the field and score a touchdown and get a two-point conversion to stretch the lead to three, guess what? He did it again.
And Tom Brady, here's the difference, Michael. We talked about this last time we were setting this game up, and I said Ben Roethlisberger is a great quarterback, not a greatest of all time quarterback. And in my mind, the reason is he makes bad decisions periodically. He hangs on to the ball too long. He forces a ball. And you saw in those final two plays the difference between him and Tom Brady. I don't mean to say this in a way that insults anybody. More like a compliment to Brady. Tom Brady would never have made that throw.
Nope.
Tom Brady would have thrown it away, or he would have gone for a fade. He's always keeps his wits about him. And just looked like Roethlisberger was a little rattled there, and he believes in himself so much that he can make it happen. It was a terrible idea, and they end up losing the game instead of tying and go to overtime.
And Mitch, here's the thing, and I don't care what they were saying to him in his headset. This man has played in three Super Bowls. His team has won two of them, okay? At some point, you have to say to yourself, okay, what's the worst scenario here?
Right.
The worst scenario is I kick a field goal and we go to overtime, okay?
But no, the worst scenario is I throw an interception,
No, when he's thinking logically, he has to think, okay, I got to make sure that I kick a field goal here and go to overtime. And even in the Super Bowl, if it had been even an incompletion, okay, that was the other similarity yesterday. If it had just been an incompletion on the ball that Malcolm Butler intercepted, the Seahawks still would have won the game. If they had just knocked the ball down yesterday, the Patriots, the Steelers kick and they go to overtime. So, man, oh, man, isn't it amazing? I read Danny Shaughnessy's column in the Boston Globe today. How many of these plays have gone the Patriots' way in the Belichick-Brady era?
Right.
Well, how about this? This is Brady's 53rd comeback in his career, like this. Extraordinary. Can we have a word of praise for Gronk? I mean, he's back now, what a target he is for Brady. And what a horse he is. And that last drive with
Brady and Gronkowski. It was just him and Brady.
Yep.
It was just him and Brady. I'm not even sure they even played with the other guys. I think the other guys were on the sideline. Right. It was him
and one
receiver.
Pitch and catch.
That's
it was
incredible.
Masterful. And it was beautiful.
And we have to say, you know, Ben Roethlisberger lost his version of Gronk earlier in the game. And, you know, when you take your best receiver out of the game, and maybe the guy was having the best year of any football player in the season, Antonio Brown, it's different. It's different. I do think they win that game if he's in there, because I don't think it necessarily comes down to that. He was having a great game. Fortunately, it looks like he's going to be back for the playoffs. But what we're looking at now is, because does anybody expect that New England's going to lose the rest of the way?
No.
We're looking at this game again on, what is it, January 21st, but in New England.
Yep.
But in New England. Mm-hmm. And this was Pittsburgh's big chance to break that, and now they're going to have to go on the road and do it again.
And if they don't have Brown, you're right, Mitch. It was funny across the game. The news got worse and worse on Antonio Brown. And again, these moments that we're talking about, and it's the beauty. It's always the beauty of sports. Could determine who's going to be in Minneapolis on the first Sunday in February. And it came down to Brady doing what he did again and again against the Falcons in the last Super Bowl. And even though the Patriots defense gave up a lot yesterday, does either one of you think that they are not going to be in Minneapolis on the first Sunday in February?
I think they will be there. The odds are they'll be there. But I would say this. I don't think all is lost for Pittsburgh. Obviously, they will have to go unless the Bills can somehow beat New England, right, which is one of the two games New England has left. They will have to go. The Steelers, of course, would have to now go to Foxborough and beat the Patriots to get to the Super Bowl. But I don't know that the Steelers can't do that. The odds are against them. But I think there's enough coming out of that game, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, if you're the Steelers themselves, to say, okay, yes, we made some big mistakes at the end. And yes, is it destined that Roethlisberger's going to make the bad calls where Brady's going to have the magic at the end? Probably. But it is not all lost. The Steelers have enough to take away from that game, especially if Brown, this partial calf tear, is, you know, he's okay. They have enough to say, hey, we could pull that off and have a big upset.
By the way, that Bills, I think we're all in agreement that the Patriots are probably going to be playing again in the Super Bowl. However, that Bills game, that's a grudge game for the Bills. They're still unhappy, to say the least, about Gronkowski's hit on their defenseless player out of bounds. And the Bills have been surprisingly good. Do I think they're going to go beat the Patriots? No, I don't think they're going to go beat the Patriots. But that game might not be the walkover that we would have thought earlier in the season.
And now let's move over to Carolina. It's interesting. The game between the Panthers and Green Bay had a lot of the similar elements to the New England-Pittsburgh game. Key players getting injured, coming down to controversial plays at the end, and mistakes. Mistakes ended up dominating that game. Aaron Rodgers was his Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know, he's astonishing, but he wasn't perfect. He was rusty, and he made.
And Mitch, I don't think he was healthy either. His arm just did the one deep ball. Right. He never misses, and I think go back and finish your point. But I think that if they get eliminated tonight, he will sort of resign from this season tomorrow.
Well, I that's what I asked you on Friday. You remember? I said, if they lose this weekend, do you think he'll keep playing? And you said at the time, you said, yeah, but I think you're working on the fact that you thought that he couldn't hurt it more. But somebody, one of the announcers said that they asked him, are you 100%? And he said, I've been cleared. That's a lot different than being 100%. And, you know, if you do, he took plenty of hits. And Minnesota is coming up, okay? I've watched Minnesota for the last 30 years. I don't care who's coaching that team. They kill your quarterback. Every time the Lions go and play Minnesota, the quarterback comes out injured. And that is a dumb thing for them to try to do in a season. They're not going to the playoffs, okay? They're not. They're just not. Not at 9-7. No NFC team's going to the playoffs at 9-7. So get him out of there and preserve him. But let's talk about that game. He made it work, and he made it not work with his interceptions. But in the end, the key mistake was not his. It was the fumble that
Geronimo Allison. Yeah.
How much more do you expect? They drive down. They get the final three. They come within a touchdown. Then they get the onside kick. That never happens. It never happens. And the shorthanded Christian McCaffrey can't hold on to the ball. And you know that they're driving in for a tying score. And then Allison fumbles the ball and it's over. So it was mistakes that knocked Green Bay out.
And Chris, it's a ball he would have been throwing to Davante Adams, except Davante Adams wasn't there because he'd been concussed by a former Walter Payton Award winner named Thomas Davis, who it was a classic targeting from college football. A helmet hit on a defenseless player from the blind side that knocks Davante Adams after the game. And by the way, all those shots of Davis looking remorseful on the sideline, shut up. You know exactly what you did, and it required some thought to do it.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, I guess he says he has immediate regret, you know, that he said that right afterwards. Oh, exactly. I agree with you. But this is the product, guys, of not throwing the book at people in the past. Right. And you talk a big game, you know, and you say, the league, oh, this is, we're not going to accept this. And we care about head injuries and all this other stuff. And then, you know, a guy can sit there and go, well, you know, maybe I'll get a game, maybe I'll get nothing. So I think that's a big part of it. And it's troublesome. It's terribly troublesome. But yet it happens week after week. We've talked about it four or five times since I've been on with you guys. I do think this also, I think we need to say Cam Newton, you know, he was loving this, right? Because it's his opportunity to come up against Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is 34. Can he draw upon the past brilliance? No. Sometimes it was there, but generally no. Wasn't quite ready, as we said. He shouldn't come back. Done. Shut him down. But Cam Newton, this is his league. This is his time. You know, he has the four touchdowns. He has no interceptions. Obviously, Rodgers has the three interceptions. It was really classic kind of passing the torch in some ways.
Yeah,
even
but
though
Chris,
I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is done.
Chris, I'll say this. I actually expected more from Cam Newton yesterday with the turnover advantage they had, okay? And with Rodgers clearly not himself, they should never have been in the situation. Mitch is right. I mean, a lot had to happen. They should never have been in that situation with the Packers at the end because there was no doubt that the game was going to get tied. And they should have put the Packers away long before they did.
Well, I thought what contributed to that was the play calling. There were times where they got these turnovers and they have the ball, they got the momentum, and they run the ball two or three straight times. There was one particular series towards the end where they did not put the ball in the air for three straight downs.
Yeah.
It was a three and out right after an interception. I don't get it. Cam Newton is quixotic to me. I mean, I watch him, and have you ever noticed how he goes down on a knee for every huddle, he calls a play, and then everyone else gets up, and he kind of still sits there for a while. It looks like, hey, Cam, you going to play? You going to play? Get up. Oh, okay. So he finally gets up, and he wanders. And then he's got the ability to make these incredible laser throws because of his strength that are not, they're awkward. They don't, they're mechanically, they're unsound. But he can laser a ball down the field, and he did that a lot yesterday, mixed in with some terrible play calling and terrible decision making on the part of those. I thought they were intimidated by playing Green Bay. I thought they kind of looked like, uh-oh, it's Aaron Rodgers. We're going to lose to Aaron Rodgers. And it ended up being a mistake by the Packers that won that game for Carolina. Not Carolina's excellence. You know, that you can say he stripped the ball. I don't think so. It was just a fumble. And if they don't make that mistake, I think Green Bay goes on and wins that game.
You know, and I'll tell you something. All I was thinking, and I, you know, we all watched that game yesterday. And whichever way you were rooting, when the Packers got that onside kick, Mitch, weren't you just thinking, how great is this? You know, that we waited.
As a Lions fan, that is not what I was thinking.
I was saying
you have got to be kidding me.
That's because you're heartless, soulless. But here's the point, okay? But when it happened that way, and after all the buildup, it was Rodgers going to come back, and then he throws interceptions, and you're thinking, holy crap. He and the Packers still have this incredible flair for the dramatic, and then a dramatically bad thing happens to the Packers, and Geronimo drops the ball.
And isn't this exactly what the NFL needed? Not that we worry about what the NFL needs, but in this season of turmoil and nonsense and controversy, to give us these two amazing games. The drama, when the NFL is good, it is so good. And look at this. We have got nuances. We've got little things. You've got big things. You've got plays. You've got personalities. You know, and Cam Newton is
Chris,
a big personality.
Let us not stop there. I mean, if we're singing the praises of a dramatic Sunday, Sunday night's game was one of the weirdest ones I have ever seen.
It's great.
And a piece of paper will go in the legacy of you know, other objects that have determined football games. I don't know where you guys come down in this, so I'm going to state my case. Okay, if you are stupid enough to take out a piece of paper from wherever you got it, and if you fold it in half so that it actually makes a little teepee when you put it in, and if you slide it in and there is room between a football and the stick to put a piece of paper, does that not logically determine that you did not get the first down? I don't know how you can put a piece of paper between something and then say, well, since the piece of paper fit, they get the first down. That proves that it did not get the first down. I am sitting here going, that whole game and literally Oakland's season and possibly what happens with the Dallas Cowboys season, hung on a piece of paper that should never have been introduced and proved the point for the opposite side, and they still made that call.
What would you have done?
I would have said it doesn't look like they made it, and it's first down for Oakland.
No, but what would you have done to try to find out whether you thought that ball was had crossed the marker or not?
I make the call like every other ref makes the call. Doesn't look like it. You don't put a piece of paper, but if you do put a piece of paper in, Mike, I was terrible at science, but I can't. If you can fit a piece, if you can fit one thing, if you can fit a credit card in between a football and a post, doesn't that mean you didn't make it?
Right. You know what, Mitch?
I'm happy.
I'm happy with human error. Guess what? After all the money they spend on technology and all the different angles and all the different replays and the guy in the booth and the guy in New York or LA or wherever the hell he is, this guy decided to use what he thought was common sense, and we can argue about what he should have said. He took out a piece of paper, not a camera. He didn't spend $4 more million to get one more angle on the play. He took out a piece of paper. And if it was human error, I don't care.
What a contrast with the Jesse James catch, right? With the technology and whatever. We've gone from the Stone Age of the paper to the high-tech 21st century with that Jesse James analysis and then what happened with that one with the Pittsburgh game. This is going to go down, I think, as it right up there with the snowplow game. You guys remember that?
Sure.
Anyone under 40 probably has never heard of it, but Google that, guys. You'll get a kick out of the snowplow guy coming in to clear a path for the Patriots to beat the Dolphins in a field goal in the snow. But it's that kind of thing. It's actually great because everyone is talking about it as we are. I agree with you, Mitch. If you can stick a piece of paper between the ball and the marker, the ball is then not at the marker. It is not a first down.
And by the way, we can litigate the piece of paper to a fairly well. The Cowboys ain't dead yet, and they at least gave themselves a chance to stay alive. And after what happened to the wreckage of the Seattle Seahawks yesterday, who is their next opponent in Dallas.
Ezekiel Elliott.
They get Zeke back, and you can see how if there's I don't know all of the formulas for the Cowboys, but not only that, but how about the way the game ends last night? How about the way the game ends with David Carr reaching for the pylon?
I felt terrible for him because, first of all, I felt terrible for Jordan Lewis because he played at Michigan, and that was like the single biggest penalty of the year, the pass interference call that literally got them. It was a smart play. I mean, Crabtree going down, and Crabtree's been in the league a long time. You got a rookie on him. Just heave it up there. Crabtree, I don't think he was even trying to catch that ball. He was trying to get a pass interference penalty, and that's exactly what he got. And suddenly, they're in touchdown range, and Carr did not need to do that.
No.
He makes this great
run. That's
just
the thing. Yeah,
get out
didn't.
Of bounds.
Yep.
You got first and goal from the 2 with plenty of time left to get in, or at least to kick a field goal to tie the game up and go to overtime. Again, another blown opportunity to go to overtime. I felt awful for Oakland. I just thought they got screwed by the paper, and then it was just a dumb decision by him to try to stretch when he wasn't going to get to the pylon.
He's, it's funny what happened to them this year. And a lot of stuff did happen to them. I love David Carr. And guess what, Mitch? If they get to 7-7 in the AFC,
you have a chance.
They have a much better chance than the Cowboys now have in the NFC. No, I mean, Carr did what he's supposed to do, and he got penalized with his team's season, essentially, for trying. Mitch, you're 100% right, for trying to make a hero play that he didn't have to make.
And back to Dallas for a second. Of course, Ezekiel Elliott coming back. The 6-game suspension will be over. Interesting if what ends up sinking the Cowboys, if they don't have this, this kind of narrow path to the playoffs, if they don't make it, that they, of course, lost 3 in a row to start that suspension of Elliott. So in many ways, they did pay that ultimate penalty for having Elliott suspended.
Well, Chris and Mitch, do you think, looking back, and of course, hindsight's always great, especially in what we do for a living, would they have just been better off having him serve the suspension at the start of the year?
Yes, 100% yes. Because right in the meat of their schedule, they lose him. So yes, by fighting it, they end up doing themselves a disservice in the end.
I don't know if I agree with that, you know, just from a football point of view. I think if you go, if you lose, you know, three or four games to start the season, it's a lot harder to lift the season up than it is to have a bit of, have a winning record and take some losses. In the end, as you say, that where they lose 3-1, 3, they were 500 while he was gone.
Yeah.
You know, if I'd rather be 500 when you're gone after, you know, and they still have a winning record than 500 to start the season. So, you can make the case either way. Yeah. Besides, it wasn't them. It was him. I mean, he was the one who was challenging. His lawyers were challenging. Now, one more game I want to bring up, and then we'll go off the field again because I want to talk about the Carolina Panthers owner who, by the way, if you've got $2.3 billion, Chris or Mike, the team could be yours.
Right. Thanks,
Or
Rich.
Is it $21
yes.
billion?
Yep.
I don't know. I'm getting confused about the, how much money it is. Anyhow, the Eagles with Nick Foles. I kept jumping back and forth to that game because I thought this was a this was such a setup game. And here's the Giants with nothing to play for, but they always play the Eagles tough. Eli Manning, you know, down to his last couple of games. It's in New York. Nick Foles has to start the game. You know, all the pressure on him trying to take over for Carson Wentz. He look, what's the line? You know, I knew Kennedy. You're no Kennedy. Okay, he's no Carson Wentz. He isn't. He's never going to be Carson Wentz. But he was serviceable, and you know, he did pretty well. And in the end, that came down to, I thought, the very last series of plays when Eli Manning could not do what Eli Manning maybe used to do when he was at his prime. He threw some bad passes on that, and the final four plays, the last one of which wasn't even catchable.
Had a great game though, Mitch.
Had a great overall game, and yeah. But just didn't finish it, and they lose by a handful of points. But Philly, you know, I mean, are they doomed? You know, is
this
just like?
Yeah. I don't know if they're doomed, Mitch. Once, you know, the Vikings seemed to restore order to more than yeah. somewhat to their season yesterday. As I watched the NFC continue to play out, I did not see we already talked about this. I didn't see a Super Bowl team or even a Super Bowl quarterback in Cam Newton yesterday. And I look at the field now. There actually is a great chance that the Minnesota Vikings are going to get a home game in the Super Bowl.
A home game and two home games to go lead up to it.
Yeah.
How about
never
that?
Have
they're
to leave
play
town.
The whole,
yep.
They, yep. whole postseason. Never. I don't think that's ever happened before.
No.
Ever happened before.
No. It's but oh, no, they no. look great yesterday. They did. They look great yesterday.
You know, I think we were bullish on Philadelphia even after the injury because of the team that they put together around Wentz. And, of course, Wentz now out. I'm not feeling so confident about Philadelphia after this game. You know, who knew that Carson Wentz's knee injury would impact the Eagles' defense as much as it did? The Eagles just didn't look as good. And, you know, as we know, a leader leads. And so, and they Tom Brady, you know, pick him up and bring the whole team on his back. So, you know, we'll see. I don't think it's over for Philadelphia, but I'm not feeling as confident that the Eagles are still marching much of anywhere after
Mitch,
the postseason.
Mitch referenced Jerry Richardson, okay? And it bears some conversation. And I'll tell you why. You know, I've known Jerry Richardson a long time. It's very interesting. He had a chance when the Panthers were in the Super Bowl to pull off an incredible double. He would have then won an NFL championship as a player with the old Baltimore Colts and won one as an owner. I don't think anybody's actually ever done that before. But he's like a fighter quitting on his stool now. The SI piece was so damning, and now the NFL is going to investigate. But there was no way out for him. And I'm not sure. Mitch, do you think that league would have actually tried to get him, force him to sell the team?
I doubt it.
No,
So
he's leaving on his own, but in
well,
a way,
he's leaving at 81. Okay, 81-year-old men looking at the landscape of what is now being done to men who are being charged with sexual misconduct don't have the stomach for it, you know. And that's how I read this from afar. I don't know him personally, so if you do, correct me if you think it's wrong. But I look at a guy who says, okay, I'm going to be facing investigation. It's going to go on for months. Other people might come forward, and my team's going to get distracted. You know what? Cash me out. Okay, I can sell team for billions of dollars or hundreds of millions or whatever it is, and cash me out.
No, you know, I mean, Mitch, certainly that's plausible, but I actually see this a different way. I think you can see the NFL's handprints all over this, fingerprints, everything. I think the NFL gets it. I mean, I think they all get it, that this is a cultural sea change, and you cannot for a second mess around with these very serious allegations. Everyone, you know, you look at that lead of that SI piece about how he
jeans
talks about
day.
Women
yeah,
every
jeans
week.
Day.
Jeans
yeah.
Day. Yeah. It is horrible. It is absolutely horrible. And that's, though, I don't even know that those are the at least four settlements of sexual harassment. Maybe they are. I don't know. But the bottom line is this is awful stuff, and it's documented, and it's bad. And I think the NFL got in there right away. I don't know this for a fact, but I do think the NFL said, you got to get out of here. You got to go. This is terrible. And I think it shows the impact of the Me Too movement, which I don't think we're doubting the impact of the Me Too movement. But if anyone out there is and saying, well, you know, oh, it's ridiculous. I think the NFL said, we 45% of its fan base is female. This is 2017, almost 2018. You got to go. I really do see the NFL involved in giving him a nudge,
you know,
right out of there.
It's so interesting, and you're right. It's such a powerful movement, and this thing has become like an episode of Law and Order. It takes like an hour to adjudicate these cases now, you know. And I'm not dismissing.
Well, they're not adjudicated. People just bail, you know, or they give it.
Yeah, again, they quit.
But they're
quit on the
they, or they're fired, or they're fired. In this case, it's a little.
And by the
I don't
way,
know,
and
I don't know,
by,
Chris, if what you're saying is true, because I literally don't know if the owners were consulted. But it's a lot harder to get booted out of the NFL owners club than it is to be fired from an entertainment company or fired from or even
or
in
from
a,
the
in
U.S.
A court
Senate
of public opinion.
For
yeah,
the U.S.
Senate. Political position. You don't have to give up your team. I mean, look at what's his name, the guy
Sterling.
Who owned the Clippers. Yeah, I mean,
Sterling,
how long did he hang on to that despite way worse behavior even than what's going on here? And he held on, had it in lawsuits and all the rest of it. I just don't think at 81, a guy who bought a team 24 years ago for $206 million. And now can sell it for $2.3 billion, which is, with my bad math, a 10 times investment return, wants to go through that in 81. Now, maybe a few of the owners called up and said, hey, pal, step aside, you know, and maybe they talked him into it. But I don't think it was a Roger Goodell-led thing. That's just my feeling. Again, both of us don't know. But I don't think they do that to their owners.
Well, I do think this. It shows the impact this has on business. Because if it were okay, you know, if it wouldn't impact business or the threat of impacting business, ticket sales, protests outside, you know, whatever, media coverage, then he would still keep, you know, he'd be keeping the team. So clearly, again, this to me, this is free enterprise. It's so bad, you got to get out. And it could impact your business and your bottom line. And that's where we are.
And, you know, it's such his story again. This is such a and by the way, you know, what you sow is what you reap. OK, so he gets no sympathy for clearly the way he treated women. And again, if you haven't read the SI story by John Wertheim and Viv Bernstein, go ahead and read it. This was an amazing, not just a sports life. He, in addition to everything else, I mean, he basically started his fortune with a Hardee's, okay? He survived a heart transplant about a decade ago, and now he goes out like this. And again, he is a victim of his own bad decisions, and also he is a victim of living in the time in America in which he now lives.
But not a victim in the
not
sense of other people.
No,
he's going to sell his
victim.
Team.
No, no, I
he's
don't
gonna
mean
make,
he's a victim.
He's going to make $2 billion.
No, no, I'm not saying he's a victim. He is. He now is presented a bill for bad decisions and things that he did, and he got caught on. That's what happened.
And this is not a coda. This is in the first or second paragraph of any retrospective down the road. Because he's caught in this. I mean, he's the big cheese now in the Me Too movement in sports, big time. And good riddance. I'm sorry, that behavior is as
and
I
Chris,
know we all three agree.
Chris,
abominable behavior.
Chris, your Ohio friend, my wife, the former Taylor McKelvey, said to me about 2 weeks ago, sports is going to be next. And I said, but are you talking about broadcasting? Are you talking about she said, somebody big in sports is going to be in one of these headlines in a couple of weeks. And boy, oh boy, was she right.
Well, if that continues though, if that continues, this will be, if they really, really, let's all be honest. We've all worked in entertainment and we've worked in sports in some way or another. Okay. We've all worked on television. We've all been around. Don't you think that if you shook the trees for real, there would be way, way, way more sexual harassment, let alone assault, coming out of the tree of sports than there is in the tree of entertainment. And I just think the reason it hasn't happened yet is because, A, it is a male-dominated field. In other words, you don't have women working for the football team, you know, side by side with the men, the same way you do in a movie or on a movie set or things like that, or in the Senate. And two, it's been winked at and kind of, well, boys will be boys, college frats and stuff like that for a long time. Now, Chris, I know you've railed against it on our show and elsewhere, but this is, it's an owner. If you ever start getting to players' comments about. I'm not talking about pulling a woman's blouse down and fondling her breasts like we have Ezekiel Elliott on tape doing. I'm just talking about comments that are getting people fired from their jobs in the entertainment industry. Suggestive comments or suggestive emails or making a female feel uncomfortable. Don't you think that is a Pandora's box in the world of sports?
I do. I think the locker room, which is where most of us interact, male or female journalists or outsiders, so to speak, with the players, the locker room is public. So a lot of these things, the Matt Lauer stories, you know, the Charlie Rose stories, have occurred one-on-one in private. In a locker room, even though women have been mistreated for years, and I certainly bore some of the brunt of that way back in the day in the 80s, thankfully it's pretty good situation now for male and female reporters. Everyone's pretty much okay with this for 30 years. Hello, we figured it out. But at least that's a public place. So it's a little bit harder to pull a Matt Lauer in a locker room because you've got so many cameras and so many people around. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. It happened to me, again, way back a million years ago.
But what about a hotel room? I mean, these guys are on the road all the time.
Well, that's true. And I've certainly a hotel hallways. I was attacked by an assistant coach.
I'm not talking about you, Chris. Yeah. I'm not talking about journalists.
No, I know. But
I'm just talking about women.
Well, absolutely.
You know, women who admire players who start off by wanting to meet them and then find out they're more aggressive than they wanted. Don't you think the litany of charges that could be made would be endless? And not just players, by the way, coaches, assistant coaches, you know, staff members on the road, on hotel trips, on road trips.
We've all seen it. When they check in, look at the lobby. Absolutely. Right. Now, then the question would go to the behavior and consensual or not. Oh, for sure. I think it's a Pandora's box. In the last, five, 6 days, we've seen the NFL Network, we've seen ESPN, and now we've seen Jerry Richardson. So it's all of a sudden starting to happen. It's starting to happen pretty quickly.
It will happen again in sports. But for now, this is a pretty big guy who takes the fall here, because what are there? Maybe 100 guys who own sports, you know, just in the three major sports. My math is probably long. It's probably not even 100. Baseball, football, basketball in this country. So because of Me Too and because of the reporting of Sports Illustrated and because these women came forward, a billionaire sports owner takes the fall here.
As he should, as Donald Sterling needed to go for the racist comments. And by the way, I think we've got one dose of racism, also racial remark, in the Jerry Richardson allegations. So it's mostly sexist or sexual assault or sexual harassment, not assault but harassment. But again, you guys, I don't know that I thought I would live to see the day where sexual harassment would get you pushed out of your ownership of the team. And that's where we are. And that is an incredible sea change in our culture and our nation's history.
Hey, before we get to basketball and Kobe Bryant and an appreciation of him as he finally says goodbye, the longest goodbye in NBA history, let's talk about Freshly. You know, the holidays can be stressful, but figuring out what's for dinner should not be stressful. Freshly delivers fully cooked, prepared meals straight to your door. You get to skip the shopping, the chopping, the cleanup. All you have to do is heat these meals up and they're ready to go and eat in just 3 minutes. Best part? Freshly is fresh, all-natural meals. They cost 25% less per meal than the average cost of takeout. And you'll never be stuck sitting around waiting for the food to arrive. Right now, Freshly is running a special offer. You can get 6 dinners cooked by their chefs for $20 off. 6 dinners cooked by their chefs for $20 off. That's a pretty good Christmas present. To try Freshly out, go to freshly.com/sportsreporters to get $20 off your first week. That's 6 meals for just $39 plus free shipping. If I do the math on that, that's about $6.50 for a meal. I basically can't eat fast food.
See, you're
for
better
that
at
price.
Math than science. I want to throw that in there.
Or pieces of paper
yeah.
in between.
Okay,
footballs.
I'm just throwing that out there.
This offer is only valid for a limited time, so go to freshly.com/sportsreporters for $20 off and free shipping. Okay, to basketball. Kobe Bryant, an official farewell in Los Angeles tonight. I know on the Sports Reporter show, God, I can't remember how many times, but it was a lot, that we bounced this thing back and forth during Kobe's career, while he was playing, when he would win a championship. Where does he fit in the all-time? What is his legacy? Where's Kobe's place in sports history?
Well, he is clearly one of the great basketball players of all time, one of the great winners of all time. But his timing wasn't great. Because he kind of came in with Michael and he left with LeBron, and I don't think he's as good as either one of them. He won 5 NBA championships, which is more than LeBron has won. He won one fewer than Michael won with the Bulls. And I think one of the things that there's two things that handicapped him. One has nothing to do with his accomplishments on the court, but the rape allegations in Colorado clearly impacted the way the world looked at Kobe Bryant. And the other thing, Mitch and Chris, I always thought about this, was he played too much like Michael. And as great as he wasn't as great as Michael, but was always measured against Michael just because of the way he played the game. And he shouldn't be punished for having Shaq any more than Michael was punished for having Scotty, except that Shaq was way better a wingman than Scottie Pippen was.
Don't you think that Kobe Bryant... Don't you think that Kobe Bryant had kind of two acts in his life? Not just two numbers for the same team, 8 and 24. But he had two acts. You know, people forget that before the rape charges in Colorado, which ultimately were dropped, although he admitted to basically having sex with someone he knew for a minute. They used to make commercials with Kobe Bryant that were almost kid-like. You know, he was dribbling on the court, playing with children. It was for candy bars and things like that. Kobe Bryant had this innocent, happy, young image. And then he kind of disappeared. Obviously, he was a pariah for a number of years, but he managed to work his way back through that. And he came back as the Black Mamba, and he was kind of cryptic, and he put out all this weird social media stuff, and he was studying animals all the time and how they moved and how he could employ that as a basketball player. And he became this other guy and a guy that a lot of people didn't like. And then Phil Jackson would come out with stuff about him, and it became clear that he wasn't the wonderful little teammate that everybody perceived him as. And yet both of those add up to his legacy, don't you think, Chris?
Right. Well, exactly. You know, the two Kobes, and kind of a perfect metaphor is that he's the first NBA player to have two numbers retired, number 8 and obviously 24. So I think he's had a better second act than I think a lot of us thought after the rape charges and the trial. My God, remember the trial. Remember the coverage of the trial, the journalists that were out there for weeks on end, everyone trying to uncover more about Kobe and the sort of details and, you know, awful details, of course. But I'm actually surprised he had the second act that he's had. I think if you had said to me at that time, is he done? Well, he's not necessarily done because he can keep playing. And if an athlete can come back and play at a high caliber, say a Tiger Woods, different storyline, but same thing, you've got a chance to redeem yourself. And I think Kobe has done a really good job of that. You know, he's welcome with the U.S. women's soccer team. He's, you know, chatting with them and talking to them. So he really has been able to overcome that in a way I think a lot of us didn't think that. And that's to his credit that his behavior was better, certainly, than when we saw that.
All right. Let me ask you this. Mitch has heard me say this, and I want Mitch to get in on this too. Mitch heard me say this for more than 25 years on the Sports Reports. All of the great players, Chris, are on the court and we're picking up sides for a game for the championship of the universe. Would you pick Kobe ahead of Michael? No. Would you pick him ahead of LeBron? No. I don't think you would. In fact, once you were picking centers and Michael and LeBron and Magic and Larry, he might not be like the 7th or 8th player picked down in the gym that day.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. So, but that's not terrible. I mean, that's still pretty
right. I mean, if he's number 7th overall player, there are 5 positions. He is the first guard in NBA history to play for 20 seasons. That is not a position that lasts 20 seasons. A lot of what you have to admire about Kobe Bryant is his longevity and his effectiveness towards the end of his career. He wasn't a bad player in his final year. He was gimpy because he got hurt. But when he was healthy, he could still drop. Here's an incredible little statistic I've been studying up for this. He has dropped 40 points on every single team in the NBA.
Yeah.
That is a pretty big accomplishment. At some point or another, he scored 40 points on your team. And so the length of his career, and of course you go back to 1996, he's the 13th pick by whom? Not the LA Lakers, by the Charlotte Hornets, who then trade him to the Lakers, and he ends up spending his whole career with the Lakers right out of high school. The fact that he matured, that he handled it, he's like LeBron that way. LeBron didn't play college ball, and so LeBron feels like he's been in the league forever. But I think part of how you measure him is over time. His first NBA championship is 2000. His last is 2010. It's very rare to find a player that wins two championships 10 years apart, let alone, you know, four in between.
And I agree that it's not fair to measure him against Michael, except here's he's close to Michael, but he would never have been. Michael won six titles. He's 6-0 in the finals, and he probably would have won two more in that stretch if he hadn't gone off to. And Kobe ended up, I think, scoring 1,000 or more points than Michael did. But Michael took two breaks in his career. One to go play baseball, one when he retired from the Bulls, and then he came back and did one of the most theatrical things he ever did at the age of 40. He averaged 20 points a game for the Wizards. And so, again, I think Kobe was obsessed with Michael the way Tiger was obsessed with Jack Nicklaus. And I just think it's odd that they were both doomed just to fall a little bit short.
Well, I think, can't we all agree that we wish we were NBA players just for the goodbyes? The NBA has the best retirements ever.
Really good. Really good.
You're never officially gone. There's always one more ceremony to go. I mean, when was the last time he dribbled a basketball? It's like now they're retired. I don't know. It is L.A., so L.A. does that kind of thing. All right, it is time for our parting shots, and Christine Brennan leads off.
All right, Mitch, thanks. As you might have heard, a Tonya Harding movie is coming out in the next few weeks. I, Tonya, is soaring. It's uplifting. It's magical. No, I'm sorry. Wrong movie. I, Tonya is an outrageous mockumentary. It's dark, it's filled with knuckleheads, and it's overflowing with scenes of domestic violence. There's some figure skating in there, too, and some of the acting is wonderful. You know, I covered every preposterous second of the Tonya Nancy saga in 1994, from Detroit to Boston to Portland to Norway, and I've seen the movie twice, so a couple of words of caution if you're thinking of going. Number one, as you laugh at this movie, remember this. Tonya's live-in ex-husband and his friends at one point talked about killing Nancy Kerrigan. Thankfully, the inept hitman missed her kneecap when he attacked her, leaving the most famous bruise in the history of sports. But make no mistake, this is only funny now because these clowns were the gang who couldn't shoot straight. And number two, if you leave the movie feeling sorry for Tonya, which I think might be one of the movie's goals, please don't. Tonya wants you to think she got a raw deal from the judges and the Figure Skating Association, but they sent her to not one but two Olympic Games, where, by the way, if she had trained properly, she should have won two Olympic medals. She also won two U.S. titles, although one was later taken away because of her role in the attack. That's not called getting the shaft. That's called squandering one opportunity after another. Remember this, moviegoers. Hollywood might not want the facts to get in the way of a good story, but Tonya Harding has no one to blame for her problems but herself.
I mentioned this earlier in the podcast today, but what really happened to Roethlisberger and the Steelers yesterday was sports. And this time when Roethlisberger was the one throwing the ball into the teeth of the Patriots defense and Eric Rowe deflected it and Daron Harmon caught it, we didn't talk about an offensive coordinator afterward the way we did when Russell Wilson threw one that Malcolm Butler intercepted, a play that ended what would have been a brief dynasty in the making for Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, who officially became a wreck yesterday against the Rams. No, this was all on a great former Super Bowl champion who makes big plays in big moments all the time, no matter how hard he's being rushed. This was on Roethlisberger, having one of the best seasons in his life, and with that chance we talked about to slay the dragon, meaning the Patriots, once and for all. The bad call this time was his. A lot of things happened on that play, but most of them are on the shoulders of Ben Roethlisberger.
Bengals coach Marvin Lewis announced that he'll step aside at the end of this season. Judging by how badly his team played Sunday against the Bears, it looks like he already has. The casual fan might hear Marvin Lewis and say, is he still coaching? Remarkably, he is. 15 years with a single team. That puts him behind just one other coach for longevity with a franchise. That coach is named Bill Belichick. But unlike Belichick, with his 5 Super Bowl wins, Marvin Lewis has not won a playoff game. Not once. He's had 6 winning seasons in 15 years, and his last couple of seasons have gone backwards. The Bengals are currently 5-9. So the question is, how did he last this long? Well, perhaps he turned the lowly Bengals around when he first got there, taking them to a couple 500 seasons, a case of an ugly duckling being happy with a Kmart dress. But there were discipline problems over the years with his teams. This is the group, after all, that spawned Terrell Owens and Chad Ochocinco. Carson Palmer eventually said he wouldn't play for them anymore. And then there's Vontaze Burfict, who's paid $2.6 million in fines for 10 separate NFL discipline issues, all under Lewis, as well as the controversial drafting of Joe Mixon. For fans of teams that fire coaches after 2 years, it's a mystery why Lewis lasted this long. But despite the terrible playoff record and 9 losing years, the reason he's likely gone is what the great Chuck Daly always said about coaches. Sooner or later, they just stop listening to you. 15 years in one place will do that. That'll wrap up today's podcast for the Sports Reporters. We do this every Monday and Friday. You can find us in all popular places for podcasts. You already have, obviously, iTunes, Apple, all the rest. If you like what you heard, please leave a review. We always like reading those. Tell your friends. And we will be back on Friday to set up what's bound to be yet another great Christmas weekend of football and many other things. Until then, with Mike Lupica and Christine Brennan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.